Okay, thank you very much for the invitation. I'll talk about the effective filter of inflation and its loops. So the structure of the talk is that cosmology is really ready for interactions. So, and I will describe in this, and this requires from the effective theory point of view some building up, and I will describe the effective theory of inflation, and that will allow me to talk about the non-Gaussianities and the inflation precision tests. And then I will pass to some more recent, very recent stuff, which is about loop, computer loops and inflation, which is developed with this effective theory. And then, if there is time, I will talk about the effective filter of multifield inflation, which is something is almost finished. So let's start by saying, how do we probe inflation? Usually, we take a potential, a scalar field up in the potential. If the potential is flat enough, the scalar field rolls down the potential until it reaches phi equal phi et, and then inflation ends. And this roll parameter epsilon is very small, and then you have a phase of quasi-accelerated expansion. In this process of coming down the potential, there are fluctuations, which we call curvature perturbation zeta, but you can think of as delta t over t or delta rho over rho. And the amplitude of this fluctuation is a square of n plus square 1 over epsilon, the variance, and the approximate scaling variance. And when we look at the beautiful plot of WMAP, there is a big qualitative thing that we are, prediction of inflation that we are observing, which is the fact that the modes re-enter the horizon and there are perturbation out of the horizon. This is a beautiful qualitative prediction. But at a quantitative level, in order to fit all these points with great precision, at a quantitative level from inflation, we are just taking the overall normalization of this number here, this number, and then how it is slightly dependent on scale, which is another number. So far on inflation, we are just talking about two numbers to test inflation at quantitative level. And now there is, of course, the hope to detect gravitational waves. That would be great because it will tell qualitatively what is the Hubble scale during inflation. But at the quantitative level, again, it will give you just another number, and maybe another number which is the tilt, maybe. But clearly, the data are really, we have much more data than this. And then this is just WMAP. Planck is up in the air, we have Sloan, we have Bicep, many experiments going on. So is there something more to look for? Because if there is, we could look for more. And the situation changed a bit when Maldacena computed the three-point function, the non-Gaussianity standard roll inflation. He computed the skewness on the distribution, which is defined as FNL times the variance. This number is 10 to the minus 5. And he found 10 to the minus 7, which means FNL over the 10 to the minus 2. And this is clearly so far undetectable. But just a few months after, DBI inflation was proposed by Eva which and companions, which it's completely okay for all the prediction of inflation, the ZP, the power spectrum, everything is okay. The only difference is that FNL is 4 order of magnitude larger, and it's currently detectable. Actually, it's currently constrained by the data. This was could be detected in the paper WMAP, in the data WMAP. Nobody looked for it because there was no prediction, but the data were already there. And the fact that there is such a signature, this was motivated, of course, by string theory, but the fact that there is possible such a prediction opens up an incredible possibility for observation in cosmology, in the CMB or in large case structure. Because if we begin to look at the three-point function, we decide that we can detect the three-point function, then because of spatial translation invariance, you get a delta function of the free momenta. Then you can use rotation invariance and approximate scaling invariant to use the function of this free momenta as a function of two-dimensional number, the ratio of the sides. In other words, the free momenta needs to form a closed triangle by translation invariance, you have a function of the shape of this triangle. You can move the vertex everywhere in the plane. And this is a picture. I will comment later about this picture, but this is really this function here, which is picked somewhere as meaning. This is a function of two variables. It's really like a scattering amplitude. It's an incredible more abundant amount of information than a few numbers. This is, if you can study this, it's just incredible. It makes very similar life to LHC. This was coming from string theory. Is this a generic signature of inflation or not? I thought that in order to address this question, it was important to develop an effective field theory for inflation. So how do you build the most pristine effective field theory for inflation, the most essential way? Well, you have to think of what is inflation in the most essential way, which is just a phase of accelerated expansion, quasi the Sitter phase, which, however, has to end, and the standard universe has to begin. This means that the symmetry of time translation in the Sitter is spontaneously broken. In fact, there is a physical clock keeping track of time and says, at a certain point, inflation, please end. This clock, this physical clock, spontaneously breaks time translation, and means that there is a preferred time slice during the Sitter phase, where you can take this physical clock, whatever it is, to be uniform in space. For example, I'm not assuming that it's a scalar field, but if inflation was driven by a scalar field, then this would correspond to the gauge delta phi, the fluctuation of the field, are equal to zero. This you can choose by performing a particular chosen tiny homomorphism, and where you can set this the fluctuation to zero. Now, once you are in this gauge, you can write down the most generic Lagrangian. You just follow the rules of effective theory, you write down the most generic Lagrangian with the fields you have compatible with the symmetries you have. Now, the symmetries you have are time-dependent spatial diffeomorphism. You can change spatial coordinate independent on each slice. And also the function of the metric fluctuation. And the only thing you have are the function of the metric fluctuations. So, and then you can write, for example, in the Lagrangian, you can find a generic function of time, that's fine because time translation is broken. Tensor with an upper zero indices is invariant under the residual symmetry group. And geometric objects built with these three-dimensional spatial slices, like the extrinsic curvature of these slices. Now, it can be shown that with this ingredient, the most generic Lagrangian you can write has the following form. Here, this is the Einstein-Hilbert term. Then there is a piece which starts linearly in the fluctuation, delta G00. Another piece which has linear fluctuation, which has a contribution linear fluctuation, which multiplies square root of g, and then pieces that start quadratic, cubic, and also higher derivative terms in the fluctuation of the metric, because the extrinsic curvature has one derivative. Now, you notice that there are, it's almost constructed, Lagrangian, because you notice that there are two terms which start linear in the fluctuation, and that tadpole terms. The tadpole terms are really necessary to be there, because if you expand the Einstein-Hilbert term around the FRW solution, since the FRW solution is not a vacuum solution of Einstein de Sitter, it will have tadpole terms. And these two terms are there to cancel these tadpoles, and they have these coefficients, which are fixed by the tadpole cancellation. In fact, if you take the Sitter space, this tadpole is not there, and this is m plus square h square, which the square root of g is just the cosmological constant, just to get a bit acquainted.
Right, what's the dimension of delta g00 as a field?
Ah, sorry, it is dimension zero, then but it's not canonically normalized. I mean, it's 0 times 4, so the Lagrangian is dimension 4.
So if it's 0, do you actually have to keep an infinite series in G00?
And I think not because later, not because the, you can canonically normalize, but this is a very, this gauge, the unitary gauge, is very complicated to understand the scaling of the energy.
You're keeping G00 squared in cube terms, but nothing else.
No, there are dot. No, in principle you write down that later. No, sorry, dots are higher derivative and higher legs terms. The quartic, quintic, you keep if you want the quartic, quintic interaction, and then the derivatives you keep if you want more precision. But there is a derivative expansion which still is not very clear from this.
It's also designed, there are these, examples where the slow roll program, slow roll is violated temporarily.
Yes.
But overall, you still get inflation, and that's,
yeah, this is still there.
That's
Yeah, still, yeah, still there. Just that this h dot has a time dependence. Okay. This is true really for every background.
It's not that you need higher dots of k or anything.
No. I will accept it. I will detach from the limit which you found, but I will tell you where that's go. That's beginning not to be included, but it's really included, just not studied.
Before you go on, can you clarify? It looks like you're doing single field inflation.
Exactly.
Is what you're going to say in the next couple slides different if we have multi-field inflation, some more complicated model?
Or? Yeah, so I'm finishing the extension to include multi-field inflation, and there is quite a complicated structure. What will happen is that you can go to, there is still a physical clock, so you go to the unitary gauge of this clock.
Preferred, a unique physical clock, or is some arbitrariness?
No, I think that it's unique because it's just the field which. Later I will introduce the Goldstone boson, is the field which is the Goldstone boson for time translation. It's unique. If another field has a VEV, it mixes. It can depend on VEV. So this is the, if there is time, I will show some slide about that. So this, as I claimed, contains all possible models of single field inflation, even single inflation, single clock inflation. But clearly, it's not very intuitive. But just to get some acquainted, let's see that in contentful model known. So for example, if you take standard zero inflation, this is the Lagrangian. But you can go to the unitary gauge where phi is taken to be uniform, and you get the kinetic time is G00, and here you get the time-dependent constant, which are just the form of this term and this term, which if you use the Einstein equation, actually, they agree. And then you see that there are all these other terms allowed by symmetries, which are not there. And once you write something which has a Laplace symmetry and in some reason it's not there, it clearly knows that somewhere else will be generated. In fact, if you take k inflation, dbi inflation, and you begin to teller expand in the unitary gauge, you get a function of g00, which teller expanded is just the first line. And still there are nothing about the second line. But if you begin to go to the de Sitter limit, where h dot is very close to zero, these higher derivative terms become important. And actually, this Lagrangian is the Lagrangian for the fluctuation of the model called Gauss inflation, which is kind of a strange model, but fully consistent. And also, if you keep another operator, you find something else that nobody had found before, to which we didn't give a name. But the point is that you're getting everything.
It's also, if you take h dot equals zero, you can either have Gauss inflation or just the Sitter space, right?
The issue is that, in the limit, yes. I think at the point you have to declare that in the Sitter space you're still breaking translation. So exactly
the same. What's breaking it? Because you have some additional coupling.
Well, naively the Gaussian boson becomes strongly coupled unless you have this. For the Gauss condensate there is this higher derivative term which enters become important before the cutoff. It's actually only a special higher derivative term, so it's consistent. But this is a choice about the UV. Standard zone inflation, for example, doesn't admit the Sitter limit.
Do you understand your
argument
is consistent?
Sorry?
It's consistent quantum field?
Yes, yes.
Gauss inflation?
Yeah, Gauss inflation, I mean, with NIMA, we try to be.
UV completion of this.
No, there is no UV completion known, but as a Lorentz GT53 is fully consistent. There is no Gauss. The name was given, and NIMA and others chose it. I don't know why, but there is no Gauss in the spectrum. But it's a Gauss because you think. I think it's just confusing, but no. But I think they agree with that. It was just a nice name.
That was the whole point of the paper, right?
Yeah, but then they say, that there is a consistent Lorentz theory around the Lorentz violating vacuum.
But you're not saying every choice of these functions here gives a consistent low energy theory. You're just saying every consistent low energy theory embeds into these functions.
Yes, yes, yeah. I mean, yeah. For many reasons, yeah. First of all, it's show that the theory is perturbed, and then second, you don't know if this has existed UV completion. For example, for Gauss inflation, we have no idea. Yeah, this is a very humble.
Maybe just from the structure, can you get pathologies like the sound speed going bigger than one? Or
yes, yes, yeah. Maybe you can. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is just the most given inflation. This is what there is for sure. Then maybe there is a subset of this. Okay, so this is anyway the Lagrangian. It contains all. We saw that it contains everything we know, more or less. I mean, yes, and even something not known. But clearly, it's completely unintuitively. There is a standard zone inflation as a limit. Where is the scalar field fluctuation? Where is the dynamics? So it's very obscure. The reason why it's so obscure is because this is the Lagrangian of the spontaneously broken gauge symmetry, the gauge symmetry being in tangent to Wolf-Fiesen. And this is the unitary gauge. And the unitary gauge, we know that the physics is very obscure. And thinking about particle physics, we will introduce the Gauss boson. So let me review briefly how does it work for the non-Abelian gauge theory broken. Let's consider a broken non-Abelian gauge theory with a gauge invariant term and a mass term, which breaks the gauge invariance. Under a gauge diffeomorphism, this mu transform in the following way. Where U is a matrix transformation, the group XA are the coordinate. And under this transformation, the kinetic term is gauge invariant, is unchanged, but the mass term gets transformed in this way. Now, there is something called the Stuckelberg trick, that means that gauge invariance can be exactly restored at all orders if, after performing the gauge transformation, you call the XA which are left explicitly in Lagrangian, you promote them to say that they are fields, pi. Gauss boson that under a transformation, and another like a transformation lambda, transform in the following nonlinear way. If this was a U1 theory, the transformation would just be the shift of the phase. Pi, in fact, this is the typical transformation law of a Gauss boson. Now, if you try to expand this term, you get non-normalizable interaction, which tells you that there is a relevant interaction, which tells you that there is a cutoff at this energy. And also, if you expand and look at the mixing, there is a mixing with the proportion to the mass, which clearly becomes relevant with respect to the leading kinetic term for energy much bigger than m. This means that for another Langevin's theory, there is a parametrically large in the weak coupling limit, parametrically large in energy, interval in energy between m and 4 pi energy g, where the physics of the Goldstone boson is decoupled from the transfer polarization and still perturbative. And this is and it's convenient to study the Goldstone boson. This is for the longitude, for the physics of the longitudinal polarization, which are the one which infects Goldstone decoupled. But if you study scalar field, it's much simpler, and the physics is more transparent than studying the longitudinal polarization. And now we have to do exactly the same thing for this theory, because again, with the Gauss theory, we do exactly the same thing. So we had terms which were not invariant under our Gauss symmetry, which is standard diffeomorphism. So we perform a diffeomorphism of parameter pi, but pi should be the standard diffeomorphism coordinate, but we say it's a field. And then we declare that pi shifts under standard diffeomorphism. So for example, whatever is 0, 0, you substitute this. And now you have restored completely different invariance in the theory, and you begin to have a field which looks like a scalar field with derivatives, etc. Now, the thing that simplifies a lot, and now you can begin to study this Lagrange, and even you could study just the one before. So this is one piece that sometimes needs to be checked, but I think it's explicit, that now there can be a simplified limit. In other words, you can be at high energy enough that the decoupling of the Goldstone boson is true, and therefore you can study just the Lagrange for the Goldstone boson, but sometimes it's not, and then you have to study the Lagrange that I just wrote. That is, you have to study the mix with gravity and the other things.
So what's the upper scale? It's analogous to the case of the gauge situation.
The cutoff? You have to check every time. Let me say the following thing. So now we have introduced the Goldstone boson. We know that in the energy there will be a decoupling limit, and there will be a mixing energy where below which you have to consider the mix with gravity and everything. Now, why this is relevant for inflation? Because we're looking at the same B at 3 Kelvin. So in reality, because in inflation, the mode starts very ultraviolet and then gets reshifted. And at a certain point, when the energy scale is over the Hubble, there is something which they freeze. And in fact, there is something, a function of the field, which is just constant. So you need, in order to do inflation, you just need to have your prediction scales over the Hubble. And then you are done until the experiment. So if this energy Hubble, which is enough ultra-high, that is above this mixing scale, then the mixing effects with the gravitational fluctuation can be neglected. So in this case, when this is the case, and you have to check this thing. But this depends on the... this depends every time on the model. Yeah, the mixing energy, yeah. Yep. Well, I'm talking always about energy, so... So, for example, for the small speed of sounds,
That's the lower limit or the upper limit? I'm wondering.
Yeah, so now there is a lower limit, which is Hubble, and you have to check if this is above the mixing scale. Now, if you are above the mixing scale, you just concentrate on the Lagrange for the pi, and you see that this Lagrange is not normalizable. There are relevant terms, and then you canonically normalize and read off the cutoff of this theory. You just check when there is unitarity violation, unitarity bound of the theory. And it's a function of h dot. Maybe later I will put some expression, but you see, you canonically normalize, this is the dimension 6 operator. Okay,
it's not a simple answer to what that scale is for you.
Well, it's m plus square h dot to the 3/2 over m2 to the 4. I mean, yeah. Is this, yeah.
In, say, slow roll inflation, what would it be?
No, there is no cutoff. Yeah, in this limit, the interactions is on inflation are all dominated by the mixing with gravity. So there is no, it's just in Planck. Now.
Another question about this mixing. So you say it has to be computed every time whether you are above the mixing energy or not. But would it be possible to state a set of necessary or sufficient conditions that allow you to just check those conditions?
I tried a bit, I didn't find a simple answer, because the mixing is really about we constrained the variable of the metric. So when this field sources some variables on the metric, which are constrained variable, like G0, G, and in IDM formalism, these are N and NI. So they don't have dynamical, they're not degrees of freedom through degrees of freedom. There's a constrained equation, a variable. And actually, and the theory is very non-relativistic. So this constrained equation, I have some powers of H, CS, which are not easy to get. So I didn't find a simple answer. It really depends on the operators, because actually as soon as different operators become important, see, the theory can be very different in different regimes. Like you can have a Lorentz invariant theory and very relativistic theory, and so there are all these limits which I just have to estimate every time.
Okay. Yeah. Can you repeat in principle what exactly do you have to check to know that you're about what is the mixing energy? You have to check like 2-point functions, 3-point functions, all possible interactions. Which one do you have to check?
You only care of comparing the terms which come from the Gostown boson just with the term of the same order which come from the mixing. Yeah, so for the 3-point function you compare with the 3-point function or the fluctuations, but you know that you just need to compare for the level, you just need to compare the linear equation, right? Because for the cube.
Just do it at the quadratic action in gravity, whatever the
term. Yeah, let's say for the cubic action it's enough, yeah.
And then And for the,
yeah, because you know that you need just to put n linear level to get the cubic action.
Yeah, I was wondering if you can have a higher interaction which is cubic or quartic in the perturbation which is still large enough that makes.
Yeah, you have to check But this you have to check with the linear term. And
the linear term.
Yeah, because you know that there is this thing for the cubic Lagrangian, you need to the constraint equation linear level. Yeah, so.
For solving the constraints.
Yeah, but this is the issue, solving the constraint equation. That's why there is no an estimate like H of M Planck, something like that, for the mixing energy.
So, I still don't really understand this absence of mixing at high energy. So let me ask you this in a conceptual way. If I had two of these pi particles and I collided at the Planck energy, I'd expect to make a little black hole which would then radiate gravitons. Are you saying that doesn't happen, or is that some other effect that's not described here, or is that consistent with the statement there's no mixing?
Yeah, I'm slightly confused by your question because I think it is energy you have just really direct coupling with the graviton. I mean, this is just the fact that if you have a scalar field here, you don't care about the mixing with gravity. It's really the equivalence principle of the coupling limit of Gostown boson, where the energy is much higher than the curvature of the universe, but below M Planck, and clearly.
This is some intermediate.
Yeah.
Okay,
well, I mean, you know, just the coupling with gravity gets strong at those energy, yeah. So I don't think.
So you wouldn't below that.
Yeah. Yes. I'm not a stringist. Yeah. And
justified by data because the gravitational wave signal is not R equals 1.
Ah, yes. Yes, sorry. Yeah.
So if Lorentz calculation actually the leading thing, what did involve mixing with gravity, right?
Yes.
The whole thing was tiny.
Yes.
So and I'm saying here with strong interactions are playing a role.
I think you have to go up with Hubble. I mean, even that interaction with Hubble that would blow up if you get to Hubble to M Planck.
I mean, it's important to understand this all conceptually.
Yeah.
As Sean just said, for practical purposes, the ones with signatures are not going to be.
You're asking for the mixing.
Which couple for which the tensor contribution to the 3-point function is important?
Yes, I agree. Yeah. Yeah, but some regimes you have to compute the mixing with gravity, the scalar mixing with gravity. The fact that, for example, you can have, maybe I will mention.
Okay.
I won't mention, but because I'm running. But you can have instability induced by the mixing with gravity. And this actually changes the speed of propagation inside the Hubble. For example, because some theories like condensation can have a Jeansy scale much inside Hubble. So the mixing with gravity actually changes the spatial relation still before the curvature of the universe. And this is actually important. In fact, it's kind of different because this model, which are qualitatively different for inflation, these are the models where the speed of sound, there is an intermediate regime where the waves grow exponentially but then freeze. These are ruled out by data. This is a qualitative way. This is a qualitative new mechanism, different mechanism, which is beginning to be ruled out by the data. I'm just saying it's not different from a square, distinguish between a square phi square or lambda phi to the fourth, which are the same mechanism, different potential. There are really dynamics of the perturbations which could be possible and just begin to be ruled out by the data. But I'm anticipating here. So, okay.
So
You said that, there's no mixing with gravity, but of course there's a square root minus g in that action. So is that the back, a background mechanism?
This is the ground.
The other question is, I think you said that action is diff invariant.
Yes.
It doesn't look diff invariant to me because it has things like pi dot squared minus di pi squared. So can you explain what you
mean? This is the diff invariant combination. But pi non-linearly, pi is a field which non-linearly arises diff invariants.
So it's not transformed like a scalar.
Under time diffform fields are not, it's a scalar under rotation, exactly.
Okay.
Because it's the field which, like a Gaussian boson, transforms non-linear under the broken group, now the broken group is time diffform. Okay, so, thanks for asking, I'll just cut we'll say what we can. So, it's okay, as I said, let's go back. So, we have this Lagrangian, when the mixing scale is bigger than, when the mixing scale is smaller than Hubble, we just concentrate on this action. And given, and this is a very, very simple action, it unifies our model, and it contains, for example, the standard kinetic term for this Gaussian boson, then a quadratic term here, plus cubic interactions, which are there to assure diff invariants, and then terms with stuff cubic and so on, higher derivative. Actually, I will come back to this, but this is really the systematic way of parameterizing the energy connection to inflation. Really, and actually, I will stress this is what we measure in experiment. And also, since we use the Fetty theory, what comes from symmetry is as explicit as possible. For example, there are some surprising results. For example, take the special gradient kinetic term, di pi square. It is nothing. There is no other term here with this property, so it is this coefficient is fixed to the symmetry to be n plus square h dot. You cannot change this coefficient. In particular, it is the wrong sign, the negative kinetic energy sign for h dot bigger than zero. Also, but you see that pi dot square instead can be changed by pumping out this operator, and this means that the speed of sound, which is the ratio of these two operators, can be changed. The speed of sound goes to zero and the limit m2 to the fourth become large. But you can do this, and so there is a difference from one speed of sound in general, and therefore you can have the two-point function, for example, there is another parameter now, it's the speed of sound. But even more importantly, you see that if you pump up the speed of this operator, because of the nonlinear transformation under time diffform fields, you are forced to put also some interactions. And in fact, there is a connection, which was found originally by Shamit and others, that the non-Gaussianity scales like 1 over C squared. And here you see, it's a symmetry property. There is nothing you can do. In particular, this coefficient here cannot even be tuned. Its size is fixed once you fix the speed of sound. So it's a theorem. But I think even more important, you see that there are these operators which can give large non-Gaussianities, and they can be large. They can be large. So large self-interaction, and large self-interaction means large non-Gaussianity. The field is not free, you can have large-ish non-Gaussianity. Perturbative, but still large, detectable non-Gaussianity. And let me just comment. Now, here, I neglected the fact that this function, in general, could be time-dependent, and whenever you insert pi, it becomes t plus pi. So, a function of time becomes function of t plus pi, and then I Taylor expand this function, and I assume that there is an approximate shear symmetry protecting the pi. That is, this f are surplused, the derivative of this f respect to time are surplused by several parameters. This is assuming that there is a continuous shear symmetry for pi, and this is consistent because in the limit of the Sitter space, there is nothing depending on time in this Lagrangian, and you see that therefore it's technically natural in a strict sense that you can assume that whatever there is a time dependence is proportional to the deviation from the Sitter space. So this is an assumption which is consistent, but it's not necessary. In fact, you ever found a way to violate. You can have a discrete approximate shear symmetry and instead big oscillation. So in this case, you just have to step back and take the Lagrangian for that. But it's not that the model is not, it wasn't studied at all, but there is a symmetry which we haven't found.
In that case, you get extra cubic interaction, for example, expanding the time dependent.
You have to keep them,
So the relation between the various coefficients, they change it because you get extra cubic interaction, like pi dot squared times pi from expanding the function.
Exactly, exactly. However, at least in the limit, let me just comment the limit in which you take the shear symmetry as an approximate symmetry. You notice this Lagrangian is really technically natural. That is, this operator here mediate time irrelevant operators which don't induce tuning, and also the operator which come with pi without the derivative are suppressed by a small scale, this global parameter. This means that really, this is really the definition of technical natural effective theories. And this means that this I think, is really, I claim, that this begin to claim, maybe, that this is changing our vision of inflation. That is, for 20 years we've been saying that non-Gaussianities are not a prediction of inflation, inflation are very small, non-Gaussianity. I'm not really sure about that, because this operator I can choose to be small, and then I have slow inflation, or large. And this is a 50-50 choice, because there is no, if this is large, I'm not tuning the theory, I'm not renormalizing the theory. Nothing bad happens. So I really think that this we're beginning to change the vision.
But you said that this action here, it contains more than all consistent field theories. So consistent
yes.
is a subset of this. So it's not obvious that when you restrict yourself to consistent field theories, it will be still 50-50.
Yeah, completely agree. Sorry. It's I think it's a very hard task what you're asking. I mean, there are. It would be very beautiful to know which are the effective theory which are not don't have any completion. There is some progress in this, for example, some sum of operators, but in general it's a very complicated task. I don't think we know in generality what are the energy theory which don't have any completion.
One more quick question. When you say that all single field models are unified and this is how you prove theorems on the signal, There's this huge literature with people who fix an inflation model but vary the initial state and look for transient signals in inflation.
Yeah.
That kind of game could be played here too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's exactly the same, yeah. You have to add just not only this parameter, but also the parameter of the state. In fact, the interstate is really not contained in the Lagrangian, it's something else, I think.
Sorry, just a brief comment. On this 50-50 thing, of course we don't know.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
But there's a way, well, I mean, that's what you were saying, basically, is that we don't know, we shouldn't play one or the other, I guess, but one sort of pedestrian way I like to think about it is, you know, slow roll, you get exponential extent for a long time by having a flat potential, which can be a natural thing, which is what you say. But another possibility is that you have a steep potential, but self-interactions are slowing the field down, and that's what's going on in these models that make a non-Gaussian signal. So, just backing up one step to the background solution, these are the two classes that one is talking about. We still don't know if it's 50-50, but there's, they both work.
Exist models of both classes.
Well, they both work. I mean,
I wanted to say that to estimate how natural it is to have non-Gaussianity, I wouldn't look at the action for the perturbation. I would look at the action for the background.
I look at all of the above, you might ask how difficult it is to mask the co-renormalization of the level of the perturbation spectrum after having found the background solution.
Well, I mean, also one of the most common ways to get non-Gaussianities is just have a second field generate perturbations. And then the whole, that's much less constrained, and you don't have to do anything wild to the action ball. Yeah. Those theories are critical.
I wasn't criticizing the statement that non-Gaussianity can be achieved, but that follows from that action. That's what I'm referring to.
I think it does, actually, but, I mean, okay, of course there is no background here, but clearly, I mean, what you are testing is the theory of the fluctuation, and it just happens to be, in fact, I mean, you could say that, in fact, this Lagrangian is technically natural, and in fact, models will be completed and been found.
Yeah, but it is not true that everything you write down will follow from a consistent theory.
You could have asked. Okay. Yeah, this is the same for the Pagno Lagrangian. You could have asked, maybe it doesn't come from any theory. That's a fair question. Yeah, I told you, I don't know the answer for that. But I think we made a lot of progress with effective theory.
I think it's
really it's a sense of, yeah.
Let's just ask this question. What are criteria for arguing it's a consistent theory?
Well, the theory, of course, is consistent with the symmetries and everything, so there's no Gauss. I don't know the criteria in general, there's no Gauss, the spectrum is fine. I'm just saying, but by consistent, they mean that there is no large tuning on the operator. The theory is not tuned if I put an operator large, and it doesn't spoil the fact that there is inflation. This was the simple statement. I mean, yeah, that might be very deep constraint. I'm not talking about those.
And also, this is just the right way to analyze data.
And in fact, the particle physicists, I will mention this, but particle physicists have been doing this for years. Right. It's called precision entropy test. It's a field, and Babar has been doing that for years. So, it's not, exactly.
I'm sorry, I'm a total non-expert, and what are the interpretations of this M2 and M3? Do you have some kind of physical interpretation?
No. I mean, then if you have a UV complete model, you can match these coefficients. like with the speed of the inflaton, for example, in the inflation, they are proportional to the speed of the inflaton on the ground. But I don't know, like, I mean, it's like the coefficients are somewhere non-analyzable operator. Ah, sorry, in some sense they are related to the scale at which the unitarity breaks, so that's related to the cutoff of the theory. The higher dimensional operator, which tells you when is the unitarity bound. This is all what I know about them. It brings me to the pi Lagrange. Again, you have this f pi, and the physical intuition just that this is the cutoff, I think. Unless you know the completion then. Okay, so I was trying to argue that the number sentence can be large. And we can have this kind of shape. So as we said, the number sentence is a function of triangular shapes. And you can have a peak on the equilateral triangle or on this configuration where this triangle is squeezed or here also, flattened triangles. And this was the model of the BI, but actually we see that as we change the parameter, we have a full one parameter family of solutions, which go from here to here, where the signal speaks on different configurations. And measuring these, it will correspond to measuring the parameters of the Lagrange. Now, this is not the old phenomenology of this Lagrange, because we notice that in the limit h dot goes to zero, this operator goes to zero. Now, this may make you think that the speed of sound goes to zero and therefore this interaction is very large. But it's possible that an higher derivative operator becomes important in this limit. And in fact, this extensive curvature term, upon insertion of pi, gives you a quadratic spatial dispatialization. So the dispatialization is of this form, the quadratic Lagrange, with omega go like a square, very non-relativistic, but fine. And again, this is another limit, which you get really to the system with inflation, continuously, and you get long Gaussianities, everything. It works more or less in the same way.
Can I go back to the previous slide? Are there shapes that you cannot get in this vector field thing?
For single field inflation, this is all the shapes. We didn't study all the shapes. For example, Eva found a model that had the Schiff symmetry only as an approximate Schiff symmetry, and then Flower, they studied the model and found a new shape on Gaussianities. But that is inside the Lagrange. We didn't think about the symmetry, so it wasn't there, but it's contained in this Lagrange.
The theory
is that all the shapes which come from single field inflation, single clock inflation, can be reproduced by this Lagrange.
I'm asking a question. Are there shapes which you cannot get?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there is a theorem which originally was due to Maldacena, which is the fact that these are the one parameter family that I studied.
One parameter family of shapes.
Yeah, actually, but this is only the limit which I consider approximate Schiff symmetry as an approximate symmetry. Then,
which symmetry is the approximate symmetry?
The continuous Schiff symmetry for pi,
okay,
as an approximate symmetry. But you can have this Eva Liam also found this model where there are monodromes. Yeah, so there will be a talk about this. But, yeah, so that wasn't studied by us, because we just took the limit. But if you take the Lagrange unitary gauge, you can study, and of course...
And the modification in your framework to the Lagrange, you keep additional terms?
I don't know, if there is no decoupling, if the mixing scale is above average, you just keep all the Lagrange unitary gauge. The one with G0, 0, and then you just solve the equation of motion. You just vary, you solve the constant equation, you go to zeta gauge, for example, and you get the zeta square plus interaction. This Lagrange is the Lagrange.
No, so I think I understand the sort of straightforward approach to do it. I mean, so that I was sort of understood already. I was asking how, in this case, in your setup, which other terms do you have to include to incorporate a case like that has a spontaneously broken Schiff symmetry for the inflaton?
Well, but already, you know, this is the Maldacena Lagrange. I mean, you know that this is the model is just a particular model with a potential. You know, it just comes from this Lagrange. It just comes from this Lagrange, right?
So I'm asking whether you need to include additional terms that are now.
Yes. I have to check if there is no decoupling, but I think there is no decoupling. I have to check this. I know that the way they did it without the decoupling, they just solved the zeta gauge of Lagrange, which is. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if one can do with the pi, but I'm not sure, because it's really any flat on set interaction.
Could do it with the binds, you would need something in the ellipses now, or it's not even clear.
Maybe the plus pi should be included, yeah. Then there's also the Cosenz equation. There is a square root of g here, which contains an n. This n contains, for example, zeta gauge, zeta dot, so you have to be...
So I think that I was taking a look after we discussed, and I think the way that you would get enough terms to compute the result exactly is expanding. All those are time-dependent coefficients, h squared, h dot, they're all time-dependent. If you expand those, as he was writing there on the board, then you get the right coefficient that allows you to compute the three-point function. If you throw them away saying it's really slow roll, like all slow roll parameters are zero, then you don't get it. Sorry. But okay. This is the approach that you're really starting from the lab.
Well, I think it's more, because so this Lagrangian can come even from not a fundamental scalar field. You just the Lagrangian for the fluctuation. Whatever is inflation driving, you know that the Lagrangian will contain a scalar field. And I think it's a bit more than saying that it's a scalar field. There's no I never said that there's a fundamental scalar field.
But you assume that there is one plot.
Yeah, but this comes from the symmetries. Well, only one, then you can put two, but that's different, okay. Two fields, but...
How many shapes have you gone into the data to look for?
Yeah, only three. Yeah, I will mention, yes, three shapes, because these two plus the one from multi-field equation.
But the real answer to Robert's question is almost every shape cannot come from this because you keep a...
Very good.
So almost every shape doesn't come from this.
Yeah, very good. Thanks. In fact, now we discuss about how many...
The reason I'm asking these questions, if you have a matter bound scenario, you predict a specific shape. So I was wondering if you would find out all classes of single field inflation.
I will mention in a second. So the other shape, which actually but let me finish. So there is the Sitter limit with this special ratio. Then there is another Sitter limit with another special ratio. Which is the standard one, but the dissociation comes from an operator which will be a total derivative, not in the sitter. So we get a speed of sound proportion to h. And also, as I was mentioning, you can make h dot positive, so the system is unstable, but this is an infrared instability because you can have k to the fourth as a dissociation inside the horizon. So you have oscillation in ultraviolet, then exponential grow, and then freeze out. Of the modes. This is just for completeness, it's a model. It has the most exponentially growth, so there is large velocity heights, and I will mention it's 2 sigma out with the data.
Are these operators generically present or just in certain models?
The first is, this K inflation model, so the DBI inflation models, they produce these operators. Mm-hmm. Zero inflation doesn't. All the zero inflation model doesn't. But again, a view that I don't, I'm trying to be different, because I'm not sure that we should start from a Lorentz invariant vacuum and compute the theory. This is an assumption, I think, to describe the theory around the Sitter vacuum from the Lorentz invariant vacuum. For example, this is the approach taken by someone. And instead, I'm just being completely honest and say, we are in the Sitter vacuum, what is Lagrange? And those operators can be large, I repeat, can be large without any problem. But concerning the question of Robert, there is one shape, so there are many shapes as some would say. These are the two-dimensional functions, now we have one parameter. Clearly, it's a measure zero on the set of parameters in the function. But you notice that this signal here is always very small. And it was conjectured stated in a proof which is hand-waving, but correct, by Mandasena, that in this limit, the two-point function, this little function is proportional to the two-point function to the two-point function of the power spectrum, which happens to be small. So here it's always small. And actually, this is a theorem which we proved by exhaustion with this Lagrangian. But multi-field effective theory and also the bouncing cosmology can produce a shape which is peaked on this side, here not. And this is something called the local shape. If you detect this, and you don't detect the deviation from the tip of the function, you rule out single field inflation. So this theorem is very nice, I think.
How fine-tuned you are, what you're assuming about self-interactions of those two fields and all that?
No, this doesn't assume anything, yeah. So the fact that the two-point function here... If you have a single clock... You're asking how can you detect this?
How much do you have to tune in your regional theory of two scalar fields to get this behavior?
I don't know. This question is very, I think it's very complicated, but...
But I want to understand, is it generic, or is it a special signature, you know?
For single field inflation, I argue that it's order one fraction parameter space. In the sense, that in the technical sense, then of course maybe you will compute theory and they're not coming that way. For these wings, we don't have, these are interactions that come, for example, for the repeating time. You need to be have a reading a bit inefficient. I can talk about that, but you have to have a reading which will be a bit inefficient, and then you can produce this kind of shape. Now, I don't know how reading, this is very hard. The only way I know to answer the generic case is if I do Lagrangian for operators, I can compute loop. It's a standard way of doing this. This is very hard. Now, if you're asking about a measure in theory space, this is very hard to do. I know.
So you need a second field which is also lighter than Hubble, right?
Yeah, it's something like issues like that, yeah.
Right, but getting an impulse to be lighter than Hubble can be a natural thing to be able to
do in certain senses. Yeah, exactly. Couplings then, you know, it's just an issue how much of tuning you have to do then in terms of these two fields, right?
Mm-hmm. So I think if you answer your question for bouncing cosmology. So in the case of bouncing cosmology, you have completely different terms in the general expression for the frequent function which dominate. So in the bouncing cosmology, you can make a generic prediction that you can differentiate.
Yeah, I propose that this bouncing, the new bouncing cosmology I proposed in this space with the shape is true, but the model, the one I did is very, it works, it's the first consistent model, it works, but is it's very non-compelling. I mean, it's ugly. Okay, my model.
And what is
Ghost?
None of this
code? No, Ghost. No, there are claims.
You're violating certain.
So there are claims, paper with certain in Ghost. I think they're wrong.
The Ghost condensate, but there aren't Ghosts as small fluctuations without this
bad. Yeah. I don't think, yeah, exactly.
But in inflationary models, isn't any mechanism at all that happens after inflation giving you a long thin triangle like that?
Yeah, you could have, like, for example, if the reheating, the decay of the inflaton depends a bit on the fluctuation of the other field.
It makes it sound kind of fairly generic, that as long as you make it happen late after, as long as you get converted to adiabatic late after inflation, then you're going to get something in that corner.
Yes, it's true, but then...
Yeah, so you have to have something light to get the fluctuations imprinted, but then you do the conversion late.
I agree with you. Though, it's more, I think, on... Yeah, I think it's less on solid ground than the other one for the action, because you can really say, answer this question in a really an operative way. The other way, yeah. But I think, yeah. Okay. So now, having said that there are these kind of non-Gaussian entities, so we can go and look for the data. Actually, it's so beautiful that this prediction were after the data were in. And since the data are public, theorists can go and do the analysis. And that's what we did. So we developed the analysis because actually the Darnova people had guessed this shape, because this shape in real space is almost clear. So they guessed, because they have no prediction from the theorists. Then they came in and we developed the analysis, and then we found this other shape that for which we did the analysis. And actually, you can do really the optimal analysis. And the good thing with the WMAP people, I don't know if the Planck person is here, but which I hope will be also true in Planck, is that they've been extremely receptive in taking what came from theory and applying to the data. So we said there is this shape, we did the analysis, we didn't find any non-Gaussianity, unfortunately. But then the WMAP people just took out what we did, and now it's in their data analysis. So for example, these two shapes are there because we did it. And this was the work which I done, but also we improved it. And so this is the current bounce. And there's no detection part like a sent to sigma tension.
How did you get the 9-year data?
Sorry.
Yes.
No, it wasn't because...
Yeah.
Maybe this guy within a year will become zero, so, and then we are 2 sigma, really 2 sigma. Now it's 1.94.
Yeah, actually, could you explain the asymmetry of that result? The last result looks highly asymmetric.
This is almost a 2 sigma detection. I mean, non-detection. It's almost a 2 sigma effect. It's 1.94. It's 2 sigma. Shouldn't be excited, but I find very exciting.
what is your final shape is what?
The reception, yeah, right. It's a linear combination of the two, which is optimal for doing the analysis. So it's a positive on this side and negative on this side. You see, there is one for this operator, you have one parameter shape. It's just one particular combination.
But in terms of microphysics, it's nothing compelling. It's just a random set of.
No, parameters. Yes. Yeah.
I'm sorry, which of these is it orthogonal to? To local?
Actually, orthogonal to. It's really orthogonal to the equilateral, but it's almost orthogonal. It's really practically orthogonal to both, actually, I think. Yeah, so it is almost to sigma. So, but I think there is something more you can do.
I can think about models, right?
Yeah, ultraviolet complete model. Yeah. For example, linear inflation, yeah. And the opposite, so there is pi dot graphite square and pi dot cube, as the opposite sign. The same magnitude, but the opposite sign. Now, if there is a theorem that the sign, like the theorem for the signs of the operator, if there is a theorem that the sign needs to be positive on it, well, but this, if this is then in the sky, then it's a problem, right? Yeah, you're welcome to. Yeah, it's possible, yes. And now, but I think there's something more you can do with this data now, because this is really comes from the effect of Lagrange, because you can take the data with the constraint from other scientists and map it to constraints on the parameter of this Lagrange. For example, this is the counter plot for when you have this operator, you can do the fact that you don't have detection or you have detection, you can counter plot on these two coefficients of this Lagrange, and this is really what you're testing. And this, you can have a counter plot at this, if for example, bound on the speed of sound like that. So this is really, I repeat, it's very similar to what precision network test people have been doing. They have exactly Lagrangian like this, and they are doing constraints like this. Everybody hopes for the detection, but in absolute detection you get this constraint. And it's kind of, and I think it wasn't obvious we could have Lagrangian for inflation like this. I think it's nice that we can have it. It's good that we can have it and we can get conclusions. Like, we can understand some parameters, we can know, data tells us that something is there or is not there. And as I was saying, there are many models like when the dispersion ratio is k^4, k², there are counterplots. These are the models with negative speed of sound, and they're offered to sigma. So the model with some instability inside the horizon, not a Gauss-like, I mean really intermediate instability, they just happen to be ruled out at to sigma. So, which is really telling us that there is a qualitative new way, or a different way of doing perturbation inflation with this instability for some time, which is ruled out. I think these are really distinguished. It's not distinguished between the tilt of the power spectrum. It's really distinguished qualitatively.
Can you say again what this new possibility is?
Just that there is a k^4 inside the horizon. So you have the special ratio, which is omega squared, which goes like k^4 over m squared plus minus k², with some small coefficient here. So in the ultraviolet, here you have an oscillation. And then as the mod come out of the horizon, they are dominated by these. So k is decreasing with time. So in very high k, the mod oscillates. Then this term wins over these, a certain energy scale. And then the fluctuation begins to grow. So you're still in the vacuum here. So you can just, and then, however, this k decreases. At a certain point, omega is smaller than h. And so you separate like this. You freeze. But, you can say this is ugly, but this is a qualitatively different model. Now you can say there is a instability inside the horizon for some time, and it's out. I find this nice that it's out, but I mean, is the data really powerful enough to begin to constrain qualitatively different?
So the amplitude isn't just
proportional. No, yeah, it's proportional. Yeah, it's proportional to the time of e to the cs delta time of instability, something like this. Okay, and also I think this is as I said, this is really. I think it is a qualitatively better way of looking at the cosmological data. It's not some cosmological parameter, it is the parameter of Lagrange. But let me say that, as I said, discovering this Lagrange is not the end of the story. Of course, we would like to have a UV complete model. And I think one can try to force an analogy, like this is the difference between discovering the pions and the chiral Lagrange, and of course discovering QCD. QCD is much better. I mean, it's much more UV complete, but you can discover both, and it's good anyway. I mean. I'm not saying that, of course, if you find some relationship there, and if it comes from string theory, there's a model, it's great. But I think there are two steps. And then you can begin playing, and I think, because I think it's not everything that's been explored in this Lagrange. For example, something which will appear, this will be in the multi-field inflation paper, but it's really about the single field, that's where we miss this signature, that's where we miss, for example, this discrete symmetry. I think the terminology is not really very well understood. So far I talked about all the three-point function. But what about a four-point function? Could you have a large four-point function? Maybe you think, if you have a large four, since the perturbation 10^-5, you think you see first the three-point function. But this is not obvious. For example, let's try to put an operator which does quarting the Lagrange. Let's just tune to zero the cubic operators. Then this operator for linearization will have a pi dot to the fourth, and then some quintic operators. Now, upon canonical normalization, you get the powers of the cutoff downstairs, where lambda u is the cutoff, and tau n l is you can parameterize the four-point function, the ratio of the quartic of the quadratic Lagrange at rising crossing, which is of order, of course, this is the dimension 8 operator, is of order h over lambda to the fourth. And this tau n l is the parameter, we parameterize the non-Gaussian axis with this, and in order to have detection, tau n l needs to be much bigger than 1. This means, because of the antisymmetry in which this operator appeared, then this means the quintic operator for tau n l not bigger than 1 is suppressed with respect to, as suppressed by an higher scale with respect to the quartic operator, and this means that there is an approximate pi minus pi symmetry in the Lagrange, softly broken by this term. And therefore, you can try to compute the loop, which this quintic operator, since you have a cubic operator, you have to insert this term. The loop here creates a cubic operator much very small. So this means that it's technically consistent to put a large operator here and the other small.
Just as a really stupid question, why isn't that symmetry broken by the fact that Hubble decreases during inflation?
Yeah, but this is a very small effect, exactly. But this is very small. When you do the loop, inside the horizon, they don't see this thing, so the loop tend to cancel. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so there are these, all these approximate symmetries, which can give large new signals. Because now, we see that you can have a large four-point function, with a unique shape, with this operator, so this is one operator, this is one shape, is the only one so far predicted by the single field inflation, and actually nobody has looked in the data for the four-point function, we are beginning to look at it now, and this could be very big in the data, nobody discovered it because there was no prediction, nobody knew what to look for. And a four-point function is even better than a three-point function, because what the three-point function was a function of two variables that you could plot. The four-point function is a function of five variables, so it's an incredible function. You can begin to study. It will be just, for sure you get sure about inflation at that point. There is no doubt that there is inflation in the sky. But then, of course, it's scattering. This is really very similar to a scattering amplitude. You begin that it's a Yukawa Hubble because you see all the characteristics of the shapes in the cross-section, and it's very similar.
And the Z4 symmetry is even better, right?
Yeah, so it's welcome to.
Look, do they expect to be able to place on the trispectrum?
Yeah, 10 to the 5 times the bound on FNL. So this tunnel should be detectable. The threshold of detection is 10 to the 5, but the bound is 10 to the 9. Okay. The bound is only from very indirect things. Nobody did the optimal analysis, so it's around 10 to the 9. So there are two, three, four ordinal masses to play with.
Just a comment on the trispectrum.
Yes.
If you take a cosmic string model,
yes,
there's a mechanism that suppresses the bispectrum relative to the trispectrum.
Yeah.
So if there are cosmic strings in the universe, then that's more modulation group for the trispectrum.
Ah, yeah, very good, yeah. But one should have a prediction for the shape. Yeah, thanks. I was talking just about inflation, but you're right. There could be cosmic strings, but the shape is important to analyze this thing, because as I said,
this is not yet published, this is work in progress. So okay. I can't tell you what the
amplitude is. Ah, okay. Good, because I didn't remember.
The size of the four-point function that you're looking at?
Sorry?
Is there competition from the Gaussian contribution? And you would do better at odd point functions, so you'd actually do even better at 5 points because there's no Gaussian contribution? Or is somehow this
so big compared to small? Yeah, you have to find a way to get to some
Gaussian contribution. Yeah, sure. But in this case, you do have to somehow clean out a Gaussian contribution.
Yeah, this is possible. In fact, the theory wasn't developed. We have to be careful with the estimator now, yes, because you have to subtract. Exactly. But it's possible to do. It's not. Maybe there's a factor of two worse than the limit you would get if there was nothing.
But you're trying to dig out something that's very small compared to the Gaussian contribution, but you can do it?
You write something which is sensitive only to the disconnect, to the connected part of the four point function.
Okay, but I mean, how large should I think of this as being in comparison to the Gaussian contribution? It's very small compared to that, right? By
how
many powers are there?
It's zeta squared times, this is the ratio. L4 over L2, this is the ratio. So it's, so it's always small. We call tau L 10 to the 5 because it just multiplied by zeta squared. It was a convention before
I'm sorry.
Had to do some fine-tuning to get a large four-point function without some large three-point functions. Can you sort of characterize that fine-tuning?
I completely agree with you. The problem is that, in fact, that's what I was thinking for a while. But then you realize that it just happens that there is an approximate... the operator, the five-point operator is suppressed by a different scale. And this comes for the four profile. So it's a higher cutoff, higher than this one. And this is enough to protect. So you generate a cubic by smaller, so you get a larger four-point function by a smaller cubic function.
You're saying there's a different scale controlling the two things?
Yes. Yeah, this tunnel here. So and then as I figure one, the unitary bound is actually this one, and then you have to cut off this loop at that level, you cut off this loop at this cutoff, and then it just comes.
So I don't remember clearly, but I thought like in Malvasina's analysis, I thought there was some parameter where the three-point function is small, and then the four-point function is generically much smaller than that.
In Malvasina just puts zero. It has all this roll inflation, so all these operators are just zero. These are all higher derivatives.
You're saying slow roll.
Is there an inflation? It's one. In fact, I would say that for this model, I have no idea what is in terms of a scalar field. I don't know what it is.
If there is this large four-point function but not a large three-point, it's not a slow roll.
No. Of course. Yeah. These operators are all zero. They are strict. Actually, tough computers tend to understand. Yeah.
You say that operators are zero in slow roll inflation.
Yeah.
This question may be jumping ahead, but your title involved the word loops. Are you saying that they're zero at tree level, or are you saying...
In fact, they're zero at tree level. But then, in fact, even Toft and Veltman, when they do the... You can recycle the calculation of Toft and Veltman to Toft and Veltman that the d-phi squared with d-phi to the fourth with the d-phi squared with gravity. And you find that they generate d-phi to the fourth, which is a term which is in the annotations, the change in the speed of sound. So that's generated, but the amount of generated, I don't remember, but it is such that the speed of sound is 10 to minus 10. Okay. Yeah, but in fact, I mean, see, these operators are there. They must be there. So now, see, I mentioned loops. And you see, loops are kind of important. And there is also a technical point why this Lagrangian claim is better than the standard approach. Because if you want to do loops, suppose you want to do one loop calculation of the two-point function. Now, there will be a divergence. You want to renormalize it. So you have to look for the counter term. Now that you have the d-phi squared term, which expanded will give a d-delta phi squared term, so this is a good candidate for a counter term. But you might have also d-phi to the 8 of the lambda to the 12, and you can put 6 legs of this thing on the background, and you get d-delta phi squared. So you have another counter term for the fluctuation quadratic. And clearly you have an infinite series. So clearly it's not. This is you don't know which are the counter term which normalize your two-point function, and this comes from the fact that it's the first time we're not in Lorentz invariant vacuum, and instead the Lagrangian this is a very technical problem, but the Lagrangian is automatically Lagrangian for the fluctuations, and a given order in derivatives there is only a finite number of operators. So. And these are the operators which get normalized. These are the counter terms. In fact, I will show this if there is time. Which I... So I mentioned loops and inflation. And so let's talk about loops and inflation. And first is who cares? Because why we should care about loops and inflation? So let's go back to models of inflation where there is standard wrong inflation. You know that the two-point function is about the scales like this. And then we measure the amplitude of the two-point function or the cumulative perturbation, which tells us the measure of each of them Planck. Actually, is more than one, so you know this. This means that since in slow inflation, the leading interaction comes from gravity, then the one loop delta phi squared will be 10 to the minus 10, and I'm not even tracking the slow parameters, which are even smaller, 10 to the minus 10 delta phi 3 level. So clearly, this is incredibly small and no relevance experimentally. And in fact, this has been the general attitude for the first 20 years of inflation. Actually, we just saw that there are theories which are much more interactive than standard run inflation. And in fact, in this theory, loops could be important. The only point is that the absence of non-Gaussian entities makes these loops quite small. It's an irrelevant interaction, so the loops are quite small, and therefore still observationally quite irrelevant. But then there's another motivation, because one vector P and TK are so loopy. And this is, I think, for many people, it's already enough. If one vector cares, we care. And one did a fantastic work, and he just said that inflation looks to be right, looks like to be right, and we have to understand its prediction very well. We know that there is a loop, so we should have the normalizability is in the sense of effective field theories. No surprise should come, let's do the loop correct computation. But I think there are other motivations. Like the Sitter space is scaled sparsely space-time from the quantum gravity point of view. And the inflation looks like a natural regularization. For example, this is an S matrix. So every calculation looks like a very agnostic approach. If we can do some calculation, let's see what we get there. And I will show an example. And I think there are other two other reasons why it is important to do loops in inflation. One is Lorentzian inflation. In fact, it is possible to show that Lorentzian inflation exists in more rigorous terms. And Lorentzian inflation. But what we did with this study we did is that you can have, if you have a two-point function on the scalar field, which is 1 over cube, let's go again standard Lorentzian inflation from on. I mean, no, let's go for the moment standard Lorentzian inflation. So you have a two-point function like this, then the two-point in free space, the two-point function at coincidence, cut it off with a fixed in time energy scale inside the horizon. Is a polynomial form, and therefore there is a square log of a that is a time linear, the two-point function grows linearly in time. This is nothing but the fact that if you have a physical cutoff, modes, ultraviolet mode keep coming in inside your cutoff, and it contributes to the variance of the field. This means that the field, the delta phi square is linear, especially this really means that there is a random walk, and a lot of data was done to. And you can develop a random walk description for this kind of field. And with this point, with this approach, you can prove that Lorentzian inflation exists in a more rigorous term. Because if you take a box full of the inflaton up in the potential, you let it go, in each point of the box, inflation will last forever, a certain point, phi, will reach phi heating, and inflation will end. The surface phi equal phi heating is a gauge invariant surface, is the surface of this volume, in terms of how much volume we have produced. This surface will not be a constant time surface, because if you are not in a term inflation, there are small quantum fluctuations, so in some places inflation lasts longer, in some places lasts shorter, and this is the density perturbation we see in the CMB. If you go closer and closer to the inflation, that is, you make the potential flatter and flatter, the duration, I mean, the space-time during inflation gets even more close to the sitter because the supply parameters are going down. But the duration of inflation gets more and more affected by the quantum fluctuation, and therefore some places last long, some less, and therefore the surface of phi equal phi heating becomes to be very, very elongated. And clearly, this surface is a gauge invariant quantity in the time inflation, so you can compute it and see something maybe goes strange with that. And what we showed is that there is a surface transition when this ratio phi dot square ratio to the fourth with the pi and everything. For the square is just a zero solution on this background, V prime over 3H. When omega drops below 1, there is a sharp transition where the probability to having, starting with my box, the probability of having infinite volume passing from being exactly equal to 0 to different from 0. I think this is really a very rigorous. I mean, of course, the inflation was right. The inflation, I'm not claiming that we showed. Of course, this was very well known. But this is a really rigorous show because there is a gauge invariant quantity we compute. We see, and then we also are able to begin to do the computation. There is a phase transition with some parameter.
This is within perturbation theory.
No, of course not. Because this is, you have to do some with this. It's. You have to take this on the wall.
Because
that's a. I think there is. Yeah, this is wrong. It's not a
problem. I disagree with that.
I will be happy to discuss. The point is, I think that our approximation was that. It's not a parameter smaller and smaller in the limit. It's an expansion smaller than so no parameter, but we can discuss about it.
You disagree in the sense that you would say that you get rid of the cosmological constant?
I disagree in the sense that the back reaction effects from metric fluctuations will be important long before you enter the stochastic regime.
Yeah.
This is for chaotic eternal inflation.
Yeah, which is what we're studying.
So I claim
for
chaotic eternal.
Yeah, I think here, the basic idea of what we think is the negligible is that we are very, very flat in the potential, so jumps in the potential don't change the test energy tensor if you change the position. And also, the real effect is really that if you jump back, the velocity is so small that it takes a long time to get to the starting point, and then you produce a lot of volume, and so you jump back again. And this, so it's really an effect, nothing to do with the fact that if you jump back, you have an higher energy, so Hubble is larger. Just the time delay of jumping back, and in the meantime, you produce a lot of volume. But anyway,
the debate is about what happens in the phase that exited, or even in the de-sitter phase. If they're just looking at the de-sitter side, it seems like there's no large back reaction. Are you talking about the phase that exited the FRW?
Yeah, are you talking about this side? I think Ashanti asked, are you talking about this side or this side?
Right.
So the metric perturbations at second order contribute a term which is more important than the stochastic driving term. And so therefore it's just not true that you 50% of the time go up the potential and 50% of the time go down the potential.
I think you're talking about this part, right? Yeah. Okay, I mean there might be room. Anyway, okay, so I think it's fine, but we can discuss it. I'd be happy to.
If you suppress satellite, it's a pressure transfer, or can you take another where that becomes less important?
I'm talking about the scale of the equations.
Okay, so yeah, here it was an approximation to the roll, and we thought it was fine, but we should discuss it, okay. But even if you do some more work, I think that doing calculation, I want to show that doing calculation in the you can get something interesting out, even about the fundamental theory. Because starting from there, with some relevant amount of additional work, you can even show that when you have this box, the probability of creating a volume larger than e to the s de sitter over 2, where s de sitter is the de sitter entropy, is a non-perturbably small in a Planck. That is, if you take this non-perturbably small Planck and pass it as equal to 0, you find that the volume of every finite realization is small, there is an upper bound to the volume of every finite realization you can have in inflation, which is less than e to the s de sitter over 2. The units of the initial volume. But this doesn't mean that the time inflation doesn't exist. That is, if you start with a box, either it goes to starts forever, inflation, or if it ends, there's an lower bound, there's an upper bound, which is e to the minus s de sitter over 2. And, clearly, this is peculiar. In fact, the existence of such a bound was initially understood by Niemann, Kahneman, and others, that clearly there is a problem with potential Xerox paradox. If inflation lasts forever and then ends, if in the limit in which you take the number of withholdings of inflation lasting forever, but then inflation ends, that's clearly you begin to have an asymmetric, and there is some tension with the Hawking the sitter temperature, the sitter ratio. But this is a true fact. We are not able actually to make a sharp statement. The statement is vague, and the quantum correction to what Nima had done are large, because you really can enter in the regime of eternal inflation. The point is that even if you have eternal inflation, either you last forever, or if you end, you don't get a lot of volume. This is quite unexpected, and there is a bound like this, and which corrects by square the one on Nima. This is quite interesting. It's at least a consistent, I think the presence of such a bound is a consistency of the interpretation of the de-sitter entropy. It had to be something like that. Maybe the factor of 2, we don't have a sharp bound for interpretation, but there should be a limit.
It's a huge limit, though.
Yeah.
I mean, one particle anywhere in that space, or two, I guess, because of factor 2, saturates the entropy. That's much bigger than you would think.
Sorry.
The number of states is the exponentiation. It's not one particle per volume. It's one particle per the entire space.
Yes. Yeah. But it's one. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, because it's really, but the claim is really that if you see all the modes coming in again after inflation, they're all correlated. Yeah. There is no. Well, I'm not. I don't. Yeah. There is no.
I guess the question is there any clean sense in which this gives an explanation to the de-sitter entropy, or is it just an observation that...
No, yeah, I don't have a sharp... We are not able to make a sharp statement. Even though, none of us was super expert about sensitivity, so if sensitivity is wanted to there, I think it's a true number, and I think it's calling for an explanation. And there is an analogous number for the black hole, actually. Is the black hole after a photon of S black hole over 2, you begin to see the first bit of information. Now, this is tempting, but we were not able to do that. I think there are some problems, but...
You're asking for a microscopic interpretation or more of another macroscopic interpretation?
Yeah, no, I was wondering if this is
like, I'm
trying to understand the point of microscopic interpretation.
Macroscopic, yeah, and see that even in the level of paradox, there is no sharp, but maybe... Yeah, I mean, it would be very. I think it's very. I would be very happy if there is something to do with this number.
And to clarify here, this was for your general low energy effect of Lagrangian, or this was for?
No, I mean, this is just. No, this is a bit unrelated. Let's just talk about standard Lagrangian equation. Yeah.
This was. Okay. Yeah. You don't know if that's satisfied by DBI inflation or.
Well, you can think that in those limits, they're very close to the Sitter space, and the Sitter sum is very large, so. All these interactions are very, you can argue that they're strongly coupled, those effective theories, unless really this operator are very small. In the Eternal Inflation regime, the coefficient of this operator needs to be very, very small. You need to be very close to either to zero inflation or to burst inflation. Anyway, so all this thing dies if the one-loop calculation, so all this thing about the existing eternal inflation and this bound and the modes, dies if the two-point function one-loop has a log of the form log k or log of time. Because in this case, the two-point function quiz goes like t square and everything is gone. So I think, this is one other reason to care of loops. And another reason is that, suppose a one-loop is an expression like this. Well, and the more k over a is much smaller than alpha. This means that even at such a razor, zeta is still evolving. This means, for some theories, which actually the theory which this kind of result might come, modes of order Hubble, a one loop means that modes of overlapping at nonlinear level, a high frequency mode, together with almost equal and opposite frequency mode, can combine to have a low frequency mode, a low k mode. This means that this short scale fluctuation can combine and keep affecting the long wavelength mode. This, if this is true, this is a complete disaster for inflation. Because the only reason why we did inflation we think is testable is really because we believe that zeta, once it's outside the horizon, is constant in time. And this means that the local physics on which we have no idea what happens, like reheating, gas phase transition, all these things we don't know what happens, don't matter for the amplitude of the modes and the scale dependence. And instead, if this is true, and inflation is just a weakly coupled version of this thing, but during the heating, the process we studied, during the heating happens at the same time, but strongly coupled. So if this happens, it's very bad for inflation. And if you take one of the results, it's at the form of this thing, and gives you all these troubles. Now, I think this answer it was clearly immediately was wrong immediately, because if you do the Fourier transform in B3K, you go to the space. You know that if you rescale the scale factor of the metric by a constant, a goes in lambda a, and you rescale the coordinate in another way, x goes over x over lambda, and k means that goes lambda k, the result physically should be invalid because the constant rescaling of the scale factor doesn't do anything. But this log wasn't a constant, so clearly there was a problem. Wasn't invalid. Now I'm going to argue that this is a mistake and this we will fix it. Of course, just to be clear, this Weinberg's paper is fantastic because nobody had been there to begin to look at the study of the one loop computation of the two point function in the Zeta perturbation.
You know you're being recorded also.
Ah, no, but I think it's true. No. No, but I think it's true. I think one very, okay, it doesn't mean my opinion. But just because we found a mistake, nobody dared to even begin. He began, think about that, found the motivation, and studied, he did all the calculations, he set up and also did the calculation, and did it, which is non-trivial, and almost got it right. So I think it's great. The only problem is that there was a mistake, which unfortunately is parametric, so it's important, and we fix it.
Before you go on, could you just say, we rely on the constant use data to make predictions. Of course, it's not really constant outside the horizon in multi-field models.
So yeah.
Can you contrast the failure of predictivity here to the failure there?
No, I think it's true. I mean, the point is that you have to be able to describe the second field at that point. You have to say what it does. And then once you reach thermal equilibrium, you say everything is constant. So you have to keep track of the predictivity of your model until you reach thermal equilibrium. You need two field models.
But you could imagine a two field model where some physics during reheating affects the conversion, and then that could be strongly coupled too.
Yeah.
So the situation could be just as bad as what you described on this slide in an ordinary, I mean, not at the one loop level, but in the tree level approximation with the two field model.
I think in that sense, in the two field model, it is true that zeta depends on time. But you have to compute it. And if your conversion depends on the heat, you have to describe the heating, which is, and then you are assuming. And then, by the way, nobody discuss gas phase transition because at the time you have reheated and so it's constant. So until you reach thermal equilibrium, you have to describe everything with the happens.
There's another talk at 12:15, so
we'll
think about.
Okay.
I mean, it hasn't been going for a long time.
Okay. So this is the motivation, and then we did a calculation, and we did it with the effective theory, because the effective theory was the simple, you can find really the simplest theory, and because at the end the technical mistake is easy to find, but then it's hard to fix. And we spent some time. And the fact that there was a fatty theory with just, at the end of the day, one diagram, said, okay, this diagram must be done. And the point is that you can do with the diagram, with the cutoff, but that's what you do, you also want to do, and, okay, I mean, it doesn't matter. And then, but you want to do with dimensional regularization. And this is really a nightmare. And it took us a while to do it. But not only fixing the mistake, but also you can really normalize the diagram. You have an normalization like, as I was saying, there are frequent attempts for what we compute, and then it gets normalized, everything works as expected. But there is also an intuitive understanding. Since at the beginning we were not able to do a calculation, we were able to develop an intuitive understanding which was able to conclude that... and the point is that the logarithmic which is there, the logarithm is of the form log h over lambda. Lambda is the cutoff, so it becomes the normalization scale. But the real log is log of h over the normalization scale, which I think is nice because it tells us that this was a higher direct interaction, and so you would expect that as the model goes outside the razor, the loop effect goes to zero, because in order to get the logarithmic running, you have to pull out the derivative. This is like d phi to the fourth for d phi cube interaction. Pull out derivative of the interactions. And so the log has many momentum in cost in front. But in the seat, when the momentum physical becomes over the Hubble, it gets frozen. So the loop effects are much larger in the seat than in Minkowski. And this is like for the two-point function, which is much larger than in Minkowski. And clearly, this is the analogous of the loops, the logs you get in particle physics. You get log of the energy of the process over the normalization scale. And logs are small if you choose the normalization scale close to the energy. Here is a great analysis, and this is really telling us that the energy problem during inflation are Hubble. This is really the, if you want, an invariant statement about the energy problem during inflation. So we do this in this very regularization, and also we have an intuitive way to understand it in terms of... you are computing expectation value, which is different from an S matrix. And there was a Schwinger developed retarded forward propagator. We found much other way of organizing the thing, which we found it more intuitively, and which I'll not talk about. Sorry about that. It's really very intuitive. In fact, we're applying this also to the. Okay, and so I conclude, and then there is, of course,
the summary slide. The one back a little bit, at least the summary of loops.
So the summary is that after doing all these sufferings, that the logarithmic run is the log of h of mu, and there is no time dependence. We can argue that the time dependence is not there, even in the case after the summation. And this is really a criterion, the inflation is fine, and the apparent inflation is fine. This is why we had set up to the problem is working. And then, skip. So I could.
How do you deal with the issue of many clocks, just qualitatively?
Just the fact that you take one clock, so you go to the unitary gauge of the clock, and then you couple this cost, then in this unitary gauge you couple to other fields. And then it gets complicated. Then you put, for example, a scalar field. But you need a reason to have a scalar field light. So we say it's a Gostom boson. And then, but then you just have a coupling, like you can have coupling. Now it's just coupling. The Gaussian boson internal symmetry. Here I just showed you one case. The Gaussian boson internal symmetry to the Gaussian boson of the tiny form field.
So all the fields are Gaussian bosons.
All the fields are Gaussian bosons. Yeah, we do three cases. They are U1, they are non-abelian. And also, we are also doing the supersymmetric case, because there is in supersymmetric case, you get a mass over the Hubble square, but it's still quite a protection, in the sense that this is just for completing. Yeah, I'm sorry, because of the color, yeah. But still, it has an help, because it's just the tuning is not so large, so we just for completing, we explore also the question. And there are many new signatures for the next. For the next time. So summarizing, cosmology is really doing ready for the data, for the interactions. After doing the free theory for many years, you are at the level of the interaction. There is an effective Lagrange which can expose all possibilities. You have just to find all possibilities, and allows for a better explanation of the data on the non-Gaussianities. In fact, we really develop the precision that we test for inflation, the analogous of those. And also, it turned out, I didn't explain, but it turned out to be for us operationally very useful for doing inflation loops, because it has a finite number of counter terms, and also because you really can see the simplest possibility and learn how to do things in the simplest case. And the logarithm, which has been there for 5 years, is really at the form of this form, and there is no time dependence in theta. Thanks.
Okay, so later on we'll be here.